providing you with the tools, knowledge, skills, and power to advance your career, grow your business, and build a better future for your community. We are the Tourism Academy. Welcome to Business Class.
On this week's episode of Business Class from the Tourism Academy, Steve Ekstrom sits down to interview Jeremy Sampson, CEO of the Travel Foundation. Jeremy discusses his switch from journalism to tourism. He talks about why he moved to Spain, and he describes some of his best habits. Let's get to the show. Here's your host, Steve Ekstrom.
All right, Steve Ekstrom here, host of Business Class at the Tourism Academy. The best part of my day, the best part of my week is getting to talk to people who make a difference in tourism. Today's guest is no different, Jeremy Sampson from the Travel Foundation. Jeremy, welcome to Business Class.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. So, before we get into details about the Travel Foundation, how did you get your start working in tourism?
Yeah, it's a great question and an interesting one, I suppose, for me. I actually studied journalism in college and had every intention of becoming a journalist or being involved in media in my life. And all of a sudden, when I finished school, I had an existential crisis and realized that I didn't want to do journalism anymore. And it's what I'd wanted to do since I was 5 years old. And so I actually looked in the classified ads, so that'll date me just a little bit, at my university and saw an opening at a travel agency in downtown San Francisco. And I thought, well, that sounds cool. I like to travel. Why don't I work at a travel agency? It's funny because I think in my mind I had this image of myself wearing, I don't know, like a Hawaiian shirt and going to a strip mall or something and talking about travel and then getting to go on trips and things like that. But actually, I ended up at an old school travel agency, one of the oldest, most well-known travel agencies in the country, which happened to be on Market Street in downtown San Francisco. And at this time, so back in the late 90s, this was a travel agency that still opened its doors every single day and had clients come in to meet with travel agents to buy cruises and coach tours and longer vacations. And I went there and actually ended up working in the marketing department for a couple of years and cut my teeth learning about travel. I did not wear a Hawaiian shirt. I actually ended up wearing a suit and tie every day, which was.
I can see that.
Yeah, it was a very old traditional top, and I've never worn a suit and tie since then. thank goodness. Now I work at home and I wear, you know, t-shirts, but that was my start in the industry. I ended up leaving for a while and coming back around in a variety of different ways. So I've actually worked kind of 360 degrees in the industry. Nice. In public sector and private sector and academia, now on the nonprofit side. But that was how I actually got my start and learned quite a bit during that period.
So what compelled you to want to join a nonprofit like the Travel Foundation?
Yeah, well, I've actually been working on the nonprofits or international NGO side of things for quite a while. I got my start in the nonprofit side at an organization called Sustainable Travel International about a decade ago. And, you know, I just loved the mission. I loved the idea of joining an organization that was really focused on helping the industry to do better in some areas that I really care about. Areas like impact on the environment, areas like, positive impact on the community, areas like, you know, equity and inclusion. These are values that are really important to me. I've always loved travel. I've always loved the travel industry, but it was really compelling to me to work on the inside and have the opportunity to work across our sector to help to advance and advocate for these issues. Fast forward, several years, I had moved on. Ran a tour operator for a couple of years, worked at a conservation nonprofit for a few years as well in Spain, an organization called IUCN, which is the International Union for Conservation of Nature. focus there on tourism development in protected areas across the Mediterranean region. And in 2019, an opportunity came up to lead the Travel Foundation. And for me, it was a dream job. It was an opportunity to jump back into a leading international nonprofit organization and try to put my own stamp on and vision on an organization that I felt already had a great amount of respect, credibility, and an incredible team who is passionate about the same issues that I'm passionate about. So for me, it was an opportunity to jump back in and work with a team to implement and implement this vision and continue the work that I've been doing for many years. So
one of the things that you mentioned was a love for travel and some of your own travel experiences. When you think back, What's your earliest travel memory?
My earliest travel memory actually is probably when I was in sixth grade, when I was 12 years old. We had a tradition in my family where once you graduated elementary school, you could go on a trip anywhere of your choosing with your mom or your dad. And I was one of the youngest in my family, so I had lots of older cousins, and this is a tradition among my whole extended family. And they all had all gone on these really cool adventurous trips, and I was a little 12-year-old nerd, and so my greatest desire was to go to Washington D.C. And go to museums and experience more of the history of the U.S. Which was something I was always really fascinated in. So I convinced my dad to go with me to Washington, D.C. and make that our big adventure. It was really cool because I got to plan the entire thing. So I've always been a planner. I'm still the one in my family who plans all of the trip. And I planned the entire itinerary, all the logistics, everything. And it really left a mark on me. And then at the end of that trip, we actually went to Chicago for a family occasion and took a train overnight, which is such a fun experience. And my dad always told the story of waking up in the middle of the night to find me in the dining car, hanging out with a bunch of other adults in the middle of the night, talking about who knows what. But that's a memory that really stuck with me.
Yeah. That's funny. I've taken that train.
Yeah. It's great fun to do overnight, you know, and it was really cool that we ended up doing that instead of flying, you know. Yeah.
Now, when you travel, what's the first thing you look up in a destination that you're going to visit for the first time?
Yeah, it's a great question. Let me think. I do like to do a lot of research, but I also find sometimes that looking up and, you know, doing that research can be quite overwhelming because there is a tremendous amount of information out there about places. And actually, this is something I feel quite strongly about, that the sort of internet age has overwhelmed travelers with far too much information, far too many differing perspectives about places. So my goal is always to find out who I know that I'm connected to in that destination, even if it's a second or third degree connection, because I'm always looking for personal connections and recommendations so that I can find the restaurants where people are actually eating locally, the places that I'm not going to find in a guidebook or in a top 10 list on the internet. And so this is actually my goal, whether it's through Facebook or whether it's through LinkedIn or another way that I'm connected, I can almost always find someone who knows someone at the very least who I can interview about that place. And for me, this is the best way to do some research and to find out where I should really be spending my time, energy, and resources.
See, as you were starting to explain that, my well-fed behind went immediately to finding great restaurants. I'm like, oh yeah, people. Yeah. And if one of the reasons that we started this podcast is that in the industry, we talk about the people. We talk about meeting people and building those relationships. But like you said, there's so much media out there about place and about product that we don't really get a chance to learn about the people until we're there, until we make those connections in market. So that was one of the inspirations behind the podcast that I haven't explained to anybody who listens. So thank you for indulging me.
Sure.
Who's made the biggest impression on you and your business philosophy?
Oh, wow. I don't know that I can point to a single person. I'm going to take a cop out on this one because I don't think it is an individual. But I'm very relationship oriented. And so I've studied quite a bit all of the leaders that I have worked with in the past to try to understand how to genuinely be collaborative and how to leverage relationships to the best of my ability in order to achieve something greater than myself. And that is my business philosophy first and foremost. And so I've really studied how people I've worked with and other leaders in the past have leveraged or not relationships and this idea of being collaborative, because I think the word collaborative is thrown around a lot. And I think it's can be quite an empty word, actually, unless you really understand and think through, first of all, for yourself, what am I bringing to the table? What is my identity? What is my organization's identity? And what do I want to get out of relationships? And maybe what do I also not want to get out of relationships? You know, or who am I not? And I think it's critical to have that sort of identity and value proposition super clear when going into any relationship, so that you can be really transparent and really clear about what you're looking for from a collaboration. And so I've really brought, I mean, and I've seen great examples, like I said, of both, really, you know, and I think also of you know, I think I work on the nonprofit side of things. So my stakeholder is the community. My mission is impact. You know, it's all about achieving impact. And actually, I've focused this whole part of my career, brought my family around the world. Probably sacrificed the opportunity to make a lot more money in private sector for the big idea that that impact and systems change and all these things are actually possible. In order to do that, I think it's really important to put ego aside first and foremost, and to think, okay, it's actually not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about achieving something bigger than myself. And also recognizing that the only way to do that is to actually align and join forces with the right people, the right organizations, and create the sort of ecosystem of change that's going to be possible to actually solve something that's much bigger than any one of us as individuals.
So when it comes down to making a difference, in the last 10 years or so, what's been the best example of your work making a difference? Or something that really strikes you as having made a difference?
Yeah. I think the most concrete thing that I can point to, I think there's a lot of seeds that have been and that are being planted, that are setting us up for making a good difference in the long run. But I'll actually point to the work that I was doing with in the med as probably the most concrete example. And I would say probably not coincidentally, my favorite project and initiative that I've ever had the pleasure of working on. I actually moved my family to Spain in order to work on this specific initiative because I found that it was, I knew even beforehand that it was going to be a really concrete opportunity to make a difference in communities. So that work, it's centered around a concept that's called MEET, which is the Mediterranean Experience of Ecotourism. And it is a network of protected areas that we worked with all across Southern Europe and North Africa. And the goal, it was really interesting because I was working during this time for a conservation organization. So the goal was not have more tourism. The goal was actually flipping it on its head and thinking, how can tourism really be a driver of conservation? How can tourism be a tool to help protect places and generate more value and more sort of attention, resources, and support for conservation in communities? So we really looked at in each protected area that we worked with in this network. And I think during the time I was there, it was more than 50 protected areas across 10 different countries that we had the opportunity to work with. We spent time in each community supporting the local protected area and conservation community to work really closely with the tourism community. So with the local suppliers, the local tour operators, the accommodation sector and others with an interest in tourism to get together and co-create tourism product that actually delivered on those conservation goals and could simultaneously be interesting enough to reach the market. And every single one of them, told us that work was really impactful on helping them get together and think through how do we achieve this kind of common vision and this common goal. It's a wonky word I like to use, but a shared agenda for conservation, for communities, and for success in tourism. And not only did we successfully bring a bunch of these products to market, but we planted the seeds for these disparate stakeholders to actually work together and negotiate and figure out how to manage tourism in these communities, some of which were already feeling lots of stress. This is pre-COVID, but lots of stress from over-tourism and over-visitation, and others that were in rural communities who really wanted tourism and wanted to bring more visitors to their community, but hadn't quite got a chance to develop and sort of reach the market in the way that they had hoped. So I think the lesson learned from all that was this idea of a shared vision and shared agenda for tourism that we talk about almost every day at the Travel Foundation in different scales and different contexts. Because for me, one of the keys to our industry's recovering successfully, building back better, as everyone likes to, the platitude everyone likes to use, and really transitioning to a more equitable model for communities will require new methods of collaboration, public, private sector, the conservation community having a voice, locals, residents having more of a voice and a say in how tourism is developed, managed, and promoted. And not in a kumbaya kind of sense, but really in a hard business kind of sense. How do we achieve these goals, and how do we, I think, ask this question: why do we want tourism, and what is tourism meant to facilitate? And by putting that question sort of as an overarching framework, it really helps to bring people together to develop a more sort of aligned vision for what tourism can actually deliver to a community. And I said to you at the beginning that I love tourism. I believe in it. I always have. I've always believed that the tourism sector can be great. It's, great for places, great for people, great for us as travelers. But I think we have work to do to make sure it actually delivers on that promise.
Quick break to tell you about Group Travel Odyssey. Tour operators, do you ever lack quality service and support from your IT provider? Are you tired of entering the same system information over and over? Well, now is your chance to be part of the GTO community. Group Travel Odyssey is software and service that helps you effortlessly manage your group travel marketing, sales, operations, suppliers, and accounting. Visit grouptraveloddyssey.com to request a demo so you can personally experience our flexible software and service. Group Travel Odyssey, business without boundaries. Now back to Business Class with Steve Ekstrom.
What is your favorite piece of business advice? Maybe even something that you wish you knew at the start of your career.
I've had several, again, several examples and several people, several mentors help me understand and see how important transparency is in business. And I mean that on many levels. Number one, as a manager, being able to have open, honest, and transparent conversations with people that I work with. As a leader, being real, being transparent about situations, not hiding from challenges and problems. And as an organization, doing the same thing, having confidence, but also being humble and being willing to talk about what's really going on. And I think that's helped me tremendously grow as a person and grow as a leader. I'd say early in my career, I ran from those things. I ran from transparency because I was afraid that I wouldn't be seen as good or valuable or whatever, you know, what have you. And I see that in a lot of young people too, like this sort of, oh, I didn't tell you that I was gonna miss the deadline because I didn't want you to know or figure it out, that sort of thing. Whereas like, of course we're gonna know. I'd rather we just talk about it and solve it. Mm-hmm. And I read this book. So that's like kind of something that I've learned all along. I also read this book recently that really inspired me, which is about, it's a concept called teal organizations. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It's an approach that recommends sort of an evolutionary step forward for organizations in today's society. Basically, the thesis of this book is that people have evolved quite a bit, and we're evolving at an even more rapid pace with all the change in society, blah, blah, blah. And organizations actually have not kept up with the evolution of people. And within this book, there's several pillars around how organizations should approach kind of modern day work. But one of the most resonant ones for me is that organizations and jobs should be set up so that people can bring their most authentic selves to their jobs. And in many cases, you have people like sort of having this professional life and professional skill set and this personal skill set. And oftentimes these things are quite separate. And I think that the most successful people and the successful organizations are those who encourage people to bring their most authentic personal selves to their job, to their career, and not have to pretend to be something else or someone else. And I find that really powerful, and I've really tried to bring that into my own life as a leader. I've been a CEO of an organization now for 2 years, and just trying to bring that authentic personal self to that role. And I think it's really, I think it really pays off in terms of my relationships. I have work to do on it, but I'm encouraging others to do the same, because I think we can capitalize on people's real strengths if they're not afraid of being themselves in their day-to-day professional experience.
And we wrap up the interview typically with a couple questions. One is, if folks want to learn more about the Travel Foundation or some of the initiatives that you're working on now, how would they do that?
Sure. Probably the best way to learn about the work that we're doing is to follow me on LinkedIn, because the organization on LinkedIn. You know, we do of course have a website, but the website, like many people's website, is not updated as frequently as we might like, resource dependent, and just time stretched. But we try to update quite frequently on LinkedIn, either through my personal page or through the organization's page. I would really encourage everyone, one of our sort of flagship initiatives that we're really encourage everyone to learn about, is called the Future of Tourism Coalition. Back to this theme that I have here of sort of collaboration, openness, transparency. about a year and a half ago, we as the Travel Foundation started working with several other nonprofit organizations in travel and tourism to figure out how we could genuinely join forces to amplify our common messages, to think about scaling up the impact of our work, and you know, really to think about how do we stop competing with each other, recognize that there is a big ecosystem of change that we're sort of looking to actualize, and start really thinking about, you know, how do we, what are the levers of change? How do we pull them together? How do we identify our own value proposition and that of other partners and other stakeholders to try to work together to tackle something that, again, is just much bigger than any of us as individuals or as organizations. And tourism is this incredibly complex, integrated system already. I mean, already as just tourism itself and its crazy supply chain and interconnectivity and the ability to affect change across that is really potentially catalytic, but also ginormously complicated. So we started the Future of Tourism Coalition, you know, first of all, just to bring the nonprofit sector together. But we developed a framework of 13 guiding principles to help guide the industry towards a more equitable and sort of equitable, sustainable, and ultimately also sort of low carbon future, because we think that's the direction that things need to go in order for our industry to truly build back better and recover in a way that benefits communities. And we have now some 600 signatories representing all aspects of travel and tourism, big companies, small companies, 40 or so destinations, civil society organizations who have signed on to the principles, and we're building a community to work together to actualize that vision.
And folks that want to learn about those guiding principles?
Futureoftourism.org.
That's nice and simple. So yeah. We wrap up with a card game.
Okay.
You're not going to lose any money.
I'm scared.
Although I do work for a nonprofit, so we also accept donations. They're tax deductible, just so you know. Pick a number,
can
one
we,
to
can
10.
Can we split that donation?
Sure. Okay. Why not?
There we go.
Pick a number, one to 10. 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I was just telling someone, I think 7 is the most commonly picked number.
I knew I was being generic.
Yeah. It's okay. So the question for you is, what are your best habits?
I think I'm really, really good at hanging out. I'm really good at it. I think like that'll be on my gravestone. Like he could really hang out. but that means that people want to be friends and want to have a good time. But it also means professionally that people want to do stuff like this and build relationships, listen, be listened to, have good conversations. And I think that habit, I'm a pretty good listener and I'm a pretty good communicator. I think combining those two things actually helps me to facilitate really good, honest relationships that help us, you know, figure out how we work together, how we have a good time together, all that stuff. And to me, that's really what all of this is about.
Well, I appreciate it. One of the things that makes tourism special is that we get to be lifelong learners and we get to learn and experience everywhere we go. Everyone we meet, everything we see is somehow or another a learning experience. And I look forward to learning more with the Future of Tourism Coalition and the Travel Foundation. I hope folks get a chance to visit your site. And I'd like to thank you for being my guest here in Business Class.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun. I wish more interviews were like this one.
You know what? I learn something every day. So it really is a highlight of my day. Well, thank you.
Take a course. Train your people. Teach what you love. Promote your products. Donate today at tourismacademy.org, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
The Business Class Podcast is produced by Stephen Gross and powered by Group Travel Odyssey. Group Travel Odyssey consolidates human resources, marketing, sales, tour operations, tour accounting, supplier management, and on-the-road management in one convenient, easy-to-use package. Improve your team's efficiency with continuously updated supplier information and pricing right at your fingertips. Group Travel Odyssey, business without boundaries.